2 weeks later, Penrod rode out to Tandala camp on his grey stallion, and Ishmael had a pot of freshly brewed Lapsang Souchong tea and a plate of ginger snaps ready to welcome him. Ishmael did not serve his ginger snaps to just anyone, but reserved them for specially favoured guests. After Penrod had fortified himself, he and Leon mounted up and set out on the 8-mile return ride to Mutaiga. "I was really looking forward to a bit of a canter," Penrod said. "Never seem able to get away from my desk these days." He glanced at Leon. "On the other hand, you look to be in fine fettle, dear boy." "The princess kept me hard at it." "Did she tell you she mowed down more than 100 warthogs, not to mention a monstrous black-maned lion and a fine leopard?" "That gracious lady and I exchanged barely a dozen words on the entire journey to the coast. I rely on you to bring me up to date. That's why I came to fetch you. Out here we can talk without fear of eavesdroppers." He waved a hand at the surrounding forest and the rolling green hills. "Not many big ears and eyes out here. So, now, Leon, tell your indulgent uncle everything."
"You'd better fasten the chin-strap of your helmet, sir, or it will likely to be blown sky-high by my revelations.
Start at the beginning and leave nothing out."
The leisurely ride to the Mutaiga Country Club took almost an hour and a half, just long enough for Leon to make his report. Penrod did not interrupt, except to confirm a name or to ask him to enlarge on some detail. More than once he drew a sharp breath, his features registering extreme disapproval. They were riding up the driveway to the club before Leon was able to say, "That's about it, Uncle."
"Enough and more than enough," Penrod replied grimly. "Coming from anybody but you, I would have had reservations. Some of it is so bizarre as to be almost beyond the grasp of a rational mind. You have accomplished more than I could possibly have hoped for."
"Do you want me to write all this down, sir?"
"No. If you had done so previously, she would have tumbled to you when she searched your tent. I'll remember it. Probably never forget it for the rest of my days."
Penrod was silent until they reached the end of the driveway and pulled up their horses in front of the clubhouse. Then he said quietly,
"A remarkable lady, this princess of yours, Leon."
"Not mine, sir, I assure you. As far as I am concerned, the hyenas can have her.
Come, let's go to lunch. Sheffy has marrow bones and corned beef hot pot on the menu today. I hope your grisly tales haven't spoiled my appetite."
"Nothing could do that, sir."
"Careful, my lad. Show some respect for my grey hairs and the stars on my shoulders."
"Forgive me, General. I meant no offence. I was simply implying that you are a connoisseur of impeccable taste."
Once Penrod had greeted most of the other diners in the room, stopping for a moment at each table, they finally reached the terrace and settled into their chairs under the bougainvilleas. Malonzi opened and poured the wine, then served the hors d'oeuvre of marrow bones on toast, and withdrew discreetly.
"Let me bring you up to date with everything that's been happening in the wider world while you've been cavorting with royalty and warthogs in the wilderness."
Penrod scooped a large, greasy lump of marrow out of the bone onto his toast as he began a short resume of events in Europe.
"The most startling item of gossip is that in the recent elections the Social Democratic Party has, for the first time in history, become the largest party in the German Reichstag. It has more than doubled its seat total from the 1907 election. Big trouble brewing there. The German military ruling elite will have to do something spectacular to reassert themselves. Anyone for a nice little war?"
He popped the marrow toast into his mouth and chewed with gusto.
"And Serbia will surely want to wade into Austria. How about another little war? Talking of which, the one in Turkey rumbles on. The Turks have thrown the Bulgarians back from the gates of Constantinople, but it cost them 20,000 casualties."
He devoured the rest of the marrow and washed it down with a glass of Margaux. While he waited for Malonzi to serve the hot pot, he went on.
"Now, closer to home, you have a large accumulation of mail, which includes a dozen or more inquiries for your services as a hunter. I picked them up from the post office and read them to save you the trouble. I've said it before, but I'll say it again. Uncle, you're a brick."
Penrod acknowledged the compliment with a gracious wave of his fork.
"Most of these communications were from nobodies. I discarded those. However, three show great promise, all from our favourite country, Deutschland.
One is from a Conservative Minister of Government, the second from a Count Bauer, an adviser to the Imperial Chancellor, Theobald von Bettmann-Hollweg, and the third from a captain of industry who is the largest single contractor to the military. Naturally, we wish to cultivate all three. However, the most attractive from our point of view is the industrialist. His name is Graf Otto Kurt Thomas von Meerbach. He is the head of the Meerbach Motorworks. I know of them. Leon was impressed. They developed the Meerbach rotary engine for aeroplanes. They're in competition with Count Zeppelin, working on dirigible airships. Hell's bells and buckets of blood. I'd love to meet the fellow. I'm fascinated by the idea of taking to the skies, but to date I've never even laid eyes on one of the incredible new flying machines, let alone had a chance to go up in one. Penrod smiled at his boyish enthusiasm. If all goes as planned, you might soon have your chance. With Percy's blessing, I have replied by urgent rate cable to von Meerbach in your name. I gave him full details of what you have to offer, including available dates and your standard rates. But, in the meantime, you haven't tasted the hot pot. It's jolly good. Oh, and by the way, there's also a letter from your pal Kermit Roosevelt. Which you opened to save me the trouble. Good Lord, no. Penrod was horrified. Wouldn't dream of it. That's your private mail. As opposed to all my other correspondence, which is public, Uncle? Leon asked, and Penrod smiled comfortably. Line of duty, my dear boy. Then he changed the subject. So, I understand that with the princess out of your hair, you're charging off Hotfoot to assist your partner Percy with the Eastmont safari. That's correct. I leave first thing tomorrow. Percy's hunting on the west bank of Lake Manyara down in German territory. He left a note for me at Tandala. He says that Lord Eastmont is keen to get at least a 50-inch buffalo, and Manyara's the best place to find one. Percy introduced me to Eastmont when he was passing through Nairobi. We had dinner together here, Percy, me, and their two lordships, Eastmont and Delamere. What did you make of Eastmont, if I might ask, sir? You might indeed. In fact, I was about to tell all you and Percy need to know. From our very first meeting, I thought he was an odd fish. Something about him troubled me. It was only after he and Percy had left for Manyara that it all came back to me with a rush and a roar, if you'll pardon the poetic license. Pardon granted, sir. Please continue. I'm all ears. I remembered there'd been a nasty little incident in the South African campaign back in 99. A young captain of the Middlesex Regiment of Yeomanry Cavalry named Bertie Cochrane was in command of a forward reconnaissance platoon at a place called Slung Neck when they ran into a strong Boer contingent. At the first shots, young Cochrane ran. He left his sergeant to try to fight off the Boers and ran for home and mother. It was a massacre. The platoon took 15 casualties from a strength of 20 before they could extricate themselves. Cochrane was court-martialed for cowardice in the face of the enemy, found guilty and cashiered. He might have been given a blindfold and a 303 bullet, if not for his friends in high places. When I remembered all this, I sent a cable to somebody I know at the War Office to check my memory of the incident. The reply came back affirmative. Cochrane and Eastmont are one and the same fellow. But there were a few more snippets of information. After his dishonourable discharge, young Bertie Cochrane married an extremely wealthy American oil heiress. Less than 2 years later, the new Mrs. Cochrane drowned in a boating mishap on Ulswater in the Lake District of Cumberland. Cochrane was tried at the Middlesex Assizes for the murder of his wife, but acquitted for lack of evidence. He inherited her fortune, and 2 years later, on the death of his uncle, he became Earl of Eastmont, with an estate of more than 10,000 acres near Appleby in Westmorland. Thus, plain old Bertie Cochrane became Bertram Earl of Eastmont. Dear God, does Percy know this? Not yet, but I rely on you to give him the glad tidings. Leon was in a pensive mood when he rode home to Tandala. When he got there, Manyara and Loycott were waiting for him. He gave them instructions for an early start the next morning on the journey to join Percy's hunting camp on the banks of Lake Manyara, then went to his tent to read his mail. There were three of his mother's marvellously fond and entertaining letters. Each was more than 20 pages long,
and they were dated a month apart, but had arrived at the Nairobi post office together. He learned that his father was well and prosperous, as always. His mother's latest book was titled African Reflections, and it had been accepted for publication by Macmillan of London. Leon's eldest sister, Penelope, was to marry her childhood sweetheart in May, which was 6 weeks ago. He would have to send her a belated wedding gift. He laid the three maternal letters aside for reply, then slit open the letter with the New York postmark and Kermit's red wax seal on the flap. Kermit had kept his word. His letter was breezy and chatty. He described the last months of the great safari with Quentin Grogan up the Nile and through the Sudan and Egypt. Big Medicine had continued to wreak havoc among the game herds. On the voyage from Alexandria to New York, he had fallen in love again, but the girl was already engaged. He seemed to have taken this rejection in good part. Then he went on to describe a dinner party at the home of Andrew Carnegie, the steel multimillionaire who had financed the great presidential safari. One of the other guests had been a German industrialist from Wieskirche in Bavaria. His name was Otto von Meerbach. Kermit had been seated across the dinner table from him, and they had taken to each other immediately. After dinner, when the ladies had withdrawn, they had lingered over the port and cigars. Otto was an extraordinary character, straight out of the pages of a lurid novel, complete with dueling scar and all. He is a great mountain of a man, booming with energy and self-assurance. And even if one does not like him, one has to admire him. He is the proprietor of the Meerbach Motor Works. I am sure that you have heard of it. In fact, I think I remember you and I discussing it. It's one of the biggest and most successful enterprises in all of Europe, employing more than 30,000 workers. MMW developed the rotary engine for flying machines and dirigible airships. It also makes motor cars and trucks for the German army and airplanes for their air force. But the really interesting thing about Otto is that he is an avid hunter. He has huge estates in Bavaria, where he hunts stags and wild boar. In winter, he hosts hunting parties at his Schloss, which are famous. It is nothing out of the ordinary for the guns to shoot more than 200 wild boar in a day. He has invited me to join him as one of his guests the next time I am in Europe. I told him about our safari, and he was very interested. He told me he has been thinking about an African safari for many years. He asked me for your address, and of course I gave it to him. I hope you do not mind. So, that's how von Meerbach found out where to get hold of me, Leon said aloud. Thank you, Kermit. The letter continued for a few more pages. Otto's wife, or maybe she is his mistress, I am not entirely certain of the relationship, is truly one of the most beautiful ladies I have ever laid eyes upon. Her name is Eva von Velberg. She is very refined and quiet, but my sweet lord, when she turned those eyes on me, my heart melted like butter in a skillet. I would readily have fought a duel with Otto for her favors, even though he is reputed to be one of the most accomplished swordsmen in Europe. That's how strongly I feel about this lovely consort of his. Leon laughed. The hyperbole was so typical of Kermit. He interpreted his description to mean that Eva was probably fair to middling attractive. Kermit ended by exhorting Leon to reply soon, letting him have all the news of his own activities and of the many friends Kermit had made in British East Africa, particularly Manyoro and Loikot. It concluded, "Salams and Vaidman's Heil. Otto taught me this. It means hunter's salute. From your BWB." It took a moment for Leon to work out what the letters stood for. He smiled again. "And all the best to you, too, Kermit Roosevelt, my brother of the warrior blood." Leon opened his travelling bureau to begin the replies to his mother and Kermit. But before he could dip his pen in the inkwell, Ishmael sounded the dinner gong. Leon groaned. He had not fully recovered from his luncheon with Penrod. But Ishmael's meals were not optional. They were obligatory.